Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome into Soccer Morning, brought to you by WorldSoccerTalk.com. Hope you had quite a lovely weekend. Hope you enjoyed all of the soccer on offer. We will discuss as much of it as we can in the next hour and change here. Big show for you today. Kyle McCarthy will join us in a couple of minutes to discuss the MLS weekend. We'll review what happened up in Jersey, what happened up in Seattle, what happened in Houston. Goals everywhere in MLS. Going to be an interesting review with Mr. McCarthy from Fox Soccer Inside MLS. Got a lot of news to cover. I'm going to get to that as well. Hope you guys are aware that we launched the SiriusXM FC show a week from today. 1 week from today, we will be on SiriusXM FC from 11 a.m. Eastern until 1 p.m. That's in addition to this show, with this show moving back an hour to 9 o'clock Eastern time. So we're doing worldsoccertalk.com/live from 9 until 10-ish Eastern, 10-plus-ish Eastern. Then we take a little break. We have some lunch. Trevor hits the treadmill or something. I don't know what he does. And then we come back on at 11 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM FC, Channel 94, which you need to buy a subscription to get. You should be doing that already. Should have happened by now. I don't know what you're waiting for. Why are you not doing that? So that's the plan. Let's get into today's headlines again. A very full weekend. We will get to all of the MLS with Kyle McCarthy, so I'm going to leave that to the side. As I said, lots of goals. I think there were 21 goals scored in like four games on Saturday. We had a triple header yesterday. We had a game on Friday night. Two games on Friday night. Is that right? So it was quite the heavy national TV weekend. Lots of soccer to enjoy. You may have checked out the Premier League as well. Chelsea creeping ever closer to the Premier League title with a goalless draw against Arsenal at the Emirates. Now, the best part of this match was not what happened on the field, because clearly a goalless draw really doesn't get anybody's juices flowing. Lots of criticism about the way Jose Mourinho played this. And look, I like my pretty soccer as much as anybody else. But when you're Jose Mourinho and you're this close to a title, why on earth would you go to the Emirates and open it up? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And yet here we go with some banter back and forth, because you know Arsene Wenger and Jose Mourinho just don't get, they just don't like each other. They don't get along. They're just two different sides of the coin. So after Arsene Wenger made some of his own comments, and the fans at the Emirates were chanting boring, boring Chelsea because of the way that they were playing, Jose Mourinho said, quote, "I think boring is 10 years without a title. That's boring. If you support a club and you wait for so many years without a Premier League title, then that's boring." Shots fired. Jose Mourinho with some shots. Lots of quotes out of Jose. This was not the only one, although I think this is the most pointed one. And this is going to reopen, and this is always a fun time when it comes to this sport. It's going to reopen that discussion. Would you rather your team play some pretty soccer and maybe come in third or fourth or mid-table? Or would you rather them play some more entertaining soccer and is that what I said already? Did I lay it out wrong? Play entertaining soccer and finish third or fourth, losing my mind on a Monday. Or play ugly soccer, especially on occasion. It's not as though Chelsea has always been ugly this year. But play ugly soccer and win a title. And this is how Jose Mourinho built his reputation, as a guy who knows how to lock things down, park the bus. It's not always about 10 behind the ball, although that's definitely the simplest way to do it. It's not always about foregoing possession, although that's definitely a part of it as well. But those things are elements of the way Jose Mourinho coaches his teams, and as I said, they're on the verge of a title. So can you throw shade at Jose Mourinho for the way that he plays and his teams play if they're going to lift the Premier League trophy? Maybe Arsenal's fans were not singing to us, he said. When you want to win the game and take your striker Olivier Giroud off, maybe they want more. Maybe they want Giroud and Theo Walcott up front. This boring team has got the second highest number of goals, has the best goal difference. Only Manchester City have scored more goals than us. Again, I don't know why Jose's responding so adamantly to these to this issue. Maybe he should just revel in the title and keep his mouth shut. But that's not Jose, is it? Elsewhere in the Premier League, Everton thumped Manchester United. Watch some of that game. Not sure what was going on with Manchester United. Louis van Gaal talking about how he knew things weren't right with his team during warm-ups or something. Whatever. Whatever. You went to go to sin and you got your ass handed to you. I suppose that happens. Chicharito Hernandez got the start in the Champions League, scored the goal in the Champions League, kept that going with two goals against Celta Vigo to keep Real Madrid in the La Liga title race. I don't think they're ultimately going to get there, but now Chicharito is building a little bit of momentum heading into a summer where you can expect him to move. And this is going to help him get some offers. Very likely going to stay in Europe, Chicharito Hernandez, and probably with a pretty decent club. I'm not sure what the rumors are out there right now. I don't know what the latest is, but he's going to find a very soft landing place, I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure if you saw this on, I think this was on Friday, that Don Garber, after the show, after we were done off the air, Don Garber held a teleconference roundtable with some reporters. Lots of questions for Don about expansion, clearly, top of mind for a lot of people, as the league makes an announcement in Minnesota, as they continue to monitor Miami, as Sacramento makes their big push. Don Garber saying, I believe we can expand and manage a league far larger than we are today without having to contemplate promotion and relegation. We'll come back to that. He also said that they're going to move past 24 teams. That may have been a target initially. 24 sounded about right. They're going to go well past that. Of course they are, because there's demand here. Now we can debate whether or not it's a good idea, and I think certainly the league's going to stretch itself pretty thin. And there's going to be issues of whether or not the talent will keep up with these number of teams. But when you have all of these cities coming at you with guys who have cash in their pockets to spend, are willing to put it into soccer, want to help get those stadiums built, there may be hurdles to jump over. Orlando's going through an issue right now. They have a team. They might have some trouble with their stadium. Again, Flavio Da Silva needs to step up. Bill McGuire and Minnesota United FC may have some issues, but they'll get that done, I'm pretty sure. You got San Antonio that already has a building, so they're in play. Sacramento is going to get a stadium done pretty quickly if the same city government remains in power, because they're all in on Sacramento being a team. We'll come back to these Don Garber quotes. Open up those quotes when we get to the phones after Kyle McCarthy joins us. But again, he said, no promotion, relegation, poured lots of cold water over that. Is that the right stance for the league to take? Why not leave open the possibility rather than squash any notion? Don't have to fulfill the promise anytime soon. But you, I think you should at least leave open the possibility that MLS could expand to, say, 40 teams. That's a lot of teams, of course. But end up having MLS 1 and MLS 2 and still keep it closed. And still have single entity. I'm not saying that's the best way to do it, but if that's the route they're going to go down, you still have some options there. But nope, going to close that door. He also called MLS teams local businesses, not clubs. Not sure what that means, and we can dissect that later, but that's not good from a pure soccer purist perspective. Chivas and Club America drew 1-1 in the Super Clásico. You have to go see Paul Aguilar's goal. Fantastic, fantastic goal. Club America obviously dealing with a lot of stuff, schedule congestion with their CONCACAF Champions League second leg in Montreal coming up on Wednesday. Bayern Munich clinched the Bundesliga title with a win over Hertha Berlin and Gladbach beating Wolfsburg this weekend. And Eden Hazard is your PFA Player of the Year in England, a worthy winner if there ever was one. Let's take a break. Kyle McCarthy, Fox Soccer, Inside MLS will join us. We'll go around the league. Don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. Face in the crowd. Talking too loud.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
It's that time of the week, the beginning of the week, Time to look at the MLS results with Kyle McCarthy from FoxSoccer.com, inside MLS over there at Fox Soccer. Kyle J. McCarthy on Twitter, one of my favorite guests because no matter what I talk about, he's got well thought out analysis. Kyle, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks. And you know what? I'm really, really happy to talk about goals.
Yes, we did get a lot of
goals. Nice for a change.
It is. It is. And okay, so I told you we were going to lead off with TFC, and they got two of theirs. It was Josie Altidore scoring for the first time since week one. But since you brought it up, the goals thing, because you and I have talked about how, how depressing some of the play has been to this point. I mean, that's a quality issue, and you could certainly make an argument that all of these goals, a lot of them, many of them, some of them, may have been because of defensive liability, and that's not necessarily a quality improvement, but it is more entertaining. What accounts for the goals? Are teams finally waking up a bit after the off season? Is it what is it exactly?
I think you have teams waking up a little bit. I think you have those defensive errors, like you said. And I think you have forwards taking their opportunities well. And all those factors lead to more entertainment and more excitement. And that's important because there were a lot of bad games early in the season. And it's nice to come back off a weekend and talk about goals and talk about intrigue. And that's something that's important for the league going forward.
So let me come to TFC. Again, they win 2-0 over Orlando City on the road. We know that TFC started their season 7 games on the road due to renovations at BMO Field. We came into this weekend with rumors swirling about Greg Vanney. I don't know how legitimate those rumors were, but certainly there was a thought that he was on the hot seat. This is an organization that has burned through coaches pretty rapidly over the last couple of seasons. They get a win. They play relatively well. I think they played some pretty classic MLS road soccer, but they get two goals from the guy they need to score in Josie Altidore. How huge for TFC was this victory?
Look, it's massive. And when you look back at the week that they had, you needed a response from the team. When you hear rumors about your coach getting fired in the middle of a 7-game road trip, it's a wake-up call. And TFC responded in kind. I thought they were the better team on Sunday. I thought they were a side that knew exactly what needed to do. I thought they had a great defensive shape, which they haven't always had, considering the personnel issues. Mm-hmm. And they did exactly what needed to be done. And that speaks volumes about the quality within the ranks, even though the results haven't been there so far this year.
Absolutely. We know they have some talent and should be a better team than they've shown, and this is a big win for them. On the other side of things, continuing problems for Orlando City when it comes to the front end of their rotation. Kaká can be as good as he is, and it's not going to be good enough week to week if they can't get goals out of their forwards. Are they going to find a solution? Kyle Aaron's a rookie. He scored a nice goal a couple weeks back, but they've got to have something else.
You would think so. And Brian Roche came on yesterday, and he made an impact on the game, certainly. But it was more about a discussion of whether he'd get suspended next week than anything he did on the field. And I think it just sort of sums up how much of a struggle it's been for Orlando City in the final third this year. And that's a typical expansion team struggle because it's tough to go out and find a good forward. Orlando City did the hard part. They located a number 10 like Kaká, and he's been great. But you still need someone to finish off the play. And Orlando City right now doesn't have
him. Is there an MLS, a quality MLS striker, or a decent enough MLS striker available to them, say, via trade right now?
Well, that's the tricky part, right? The market's really tight because of the lack of allocation money across the league right now. So it's tough to go out and say, look, we're going to get a guy and he's got to come in and fix it, right? It's a matter of trying to be patient, trying to get the most out of what you got, and then hoping you can scrape enough money together to make a decent move during the summer.
Yeah. We go back to Saturday, the goal fest that happened. Four teams scored 4 goals on Saturday. 2 of them played each other, Houston and Sporting Kansas City. Not exactly what we usually expect out of these two teams after a history of creating a rivalry based on competing in the Eastern Conference. Now, they both moved to the West, and apparently we're just going to score goals all the time now.
That's fine. That's fun. We'll take it. Absolutely. And It was an uncharacteristic night for both teams, I would say. But when you end with a point, that's a positive to take forward. I know sporting manager Peter Vermes will want his side to defend better, and I'm sure Owen Coyle is the same. But that's an engaging way to spend a Saturday night, I would say.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. Giles Barnes scoring twice, but creating a goal for Sporting Kansas City on the other end with the bad pass, and then a questionable red card, and handball in the box that Penny Failhaber put away. Just give me a bit here on Benny Failhaber and his influence on Sporting Kansas City. We're starting to hear again, low level rumblings that maybe Benny is performing well enough that Klinsmann should give him a look. I'm not saying he deserves a call up or he'll get one, but certainly he's on that level these days.
He continues to impress as part of that Sporting midfield. It hasn't been an easy road for Sporting in the center of the park this year. They made a lot of changes. They're still trying to figure out the balance a little bit. But when Benny Failhaber is good, he's really good. And he's a player who can make an impact in this league. And you saw that on Saturday night. And you understand some of the reasons why people are pointing to him as a potential national team call. He's a guy who's been there. He's done it in the past. But I think it's pretty clear at this point that Jurgen Klinsmann has more faith in other options.
It comes to the Columbus Crew SC, who dropped 4 on Philadelphia in a 4-1 home win. Kai Kamara, I heard Taylor Twellman say on the, I think it was on the LA New York broadcast, my national team games are all mixed up in my head, Kyle, but I think that was the broadcast in which he was sort of identified, maybe Felipe Martins, but also Kai Kamara as some of the biggest off-season acquisitions. I don't know if there's an argument against Kai right now. We thought that the Crew were missing a striker, and Kai is proving that certainly was the case.
Columbus has needed a number 9 for years and years and years, and Kai Kamara is filling those shoes perfectly right now because he's allowing the Crew to stretch the field over the top, and yet he's also supplying that aerial element that's critical with the way that that Crew SC pushes the fullbacks onwards and crosses the ball into the box. And Columbus thumped Philadelphia on Saturday. Just took so much advantage of the spaces that allowed the Crew SC to push forward. And it was another good performance from a team that continues to move from strength to strength this year.
And Crew SC, certainly one of those teams identified as a potential Eastern Conference contender. So this kind of performance is only going to feed that belief. And the other side of things for Philadelphia, the turmoil continues. You go on the road, maybe you're scrapping for a point, but to lose 4-1 in this kind of manner, and again, they've had that goalkeeper drama, and it just doesn't seem that they can find any sort of balance in their lineup either.
It's a bit of a mess in Chester right now, it seems. Just trying to find something, anything to slide the team back on track. And there are a lot of different issues that are going into it, but first and foremost, their management of space across the board is messy. And you saw that against Columbus on Saturday. They simply concede too much space in the wrong areas, and they get punished. And Columbus does a great job of hurting teams who are incapable of transitioning from attack to defense. And Crew SC really put a hurting on the Union on Saturday.
Beyond the addition of the number 9, Kai Kamara, have you seen anything change, evolve in the way that Greg Berhalter is setting out his team? Or are we seeing the Crew of 2014, which again sort of erupted on the scene, and there was a lot of talk about how Berhalter was pushing those fullbacks up? Are we just seeing that with the now added element of a legitimate front-level striker?
There are always tweaks and amendments as you go along, but I think the broad strokes are similar, and I think the addition of Kamara really enhances those operations, particularly in the middle of the park. So for Columbus, they're a side that is very good at keeping the ball, and now they have that element so that if they need to go directly, they've got Kamara up front to provide a different sort of outlet, and it's made them very potent.
The other team to score 4 goals on Saturday, the New England Revolution, a home win over RSL 4 for nothing. Just barrage of shots and goals on the RSL net. And we know how much talent, we know how much attacking ability the New England Revolution have. There's still, you know, a couple of issues at the back, at least in terms of who's healthy and who's not. Jermaine Jones starts at center back again in this game, so that means Andy Dorman and Scott Caldwell in the middle. But those guys up top just took RSL apart. Obviously, you know, Scott Caldwell got a goal too. Let's recognize that. But what was it about that performance for you that really put New England so much in control against a quality team? I mean, whether RSL's struggling with their formation and that adjustment, there's still good players on that field.
Absolutely. RSL really struggling defensively with their choices back there. A lot of availability issues after Chris Schuler had surgery on Thursday. But New England, when they're really firing, they're moving all over the place, and they're coming at you from different angles and really testing your shape. And I thought they were able to do that on Saturday. And you look at that team and you see all of those attacking options. You see the depth that Jay Heaps has. He can really find a way to elicit the best out of his team. And you saw on Saturday how dangerous they are when they're firing on all cylinders. And it's a warning to everyone else, because that's a side that's really capable of tearing teams apart on the night.
You know when New England is feeling good, and you know it's going well when Chris Tierney scores on it with his right foot, Kyle. I was impressed by that. Go ahead.
It's a precious snowflake, that right foot shot from Chris Tierney. And it really speaks volumes how dangerous his left is, because he can get anybody to bite on his left foot at any time. And when you can, you know, every so often throw the knuckleball and get the right foot in the mix. And he took his goal very well. Yeah. It was a well hit shot with that right foot. And it sort of summed up how good the Revs were on tonight.
Yeah, you have goals by Tierney, Agudelo, Davies, and Caldwell. Caldwell, after a scramble, ball comes out. He finally puts away a couple of chances for New England. And I'm looking at this lineup, Kyle, and I know this is a team that you pay close attention to based on where you're based and your other jobs. And I look and I just wonder how can they find enough time for all of these guys? Diego Fagundes comes on for Charlie Davies in the 62nd minute. He's, after maybe a down year last year, started to show some signs of improvement again. How does the rotation work for Jay Heaps, and are they really going to be able to hang on to all these guys, especially the young ones like Fagundes who may be looking to move abroad?
Everything is based on form with the Revs, and Jay Heaps is pretty upfront about it and says, hey, look, you need to be playing well or else we're going to make some changes and get guys in there who can do the job. And you've seen that at different points this year where he's been able to rotate through his attacking options, sometimes through injury, other times through choice. And that helps because it keeps everybody sharp. And you look at the sort of output over the past six games, they're unbeaten. Mm-hmm. They've just scored four goals at home, and they're finally starting to hit that top form that they've always been looking for this season. So it's working, certainly. The question, as you said, is how long you can keep those pieces in place. And I think it's something where the Revs have planned for that, and they've tried to give themselves options to maintain this group for as long as possible.
And obviously a lot of teams would love to have guys like Kellen Rowe and Diego Fagundes and Steve Newman on the bench to bring in late in the game, whether you're up four goals or not. But I think for the Revs, and this is true for a lot of teams, it's about the midfield, it's about defending. And I look at this, Woodbury, Farrell, Jones, and Tierney to start, and you have Gonsalves and Alston on the bench. Is how close to the first-choice team is this, and what kind of changes might Heaps make if everybody is healthy and 100% fit?
Well, if everybody's healthy, then Jose Gonsalves is going to play. Certainly, he's been dealing with a calf complaint, but he's the linchpin back there. He's the guy who makes everything tick, and I think he's an important part of what they're going to do defensively. London Woodbury's impressed since he's come in the lineup. That's two good performances in a row from him, but Kevin Alston's certainly going to be a guy who's going to get a lot of minutes if he can stay healthy. Mm-hmm. In that back four. So Again, lots of options, lots of choices, and a really enviable situation for Heaps to be in, considering how everything has worked out.
Well,
so far.
Which one of that midfield pair takes a spot on the bench when Jones moves up into the midfield, as you would imagine he would when Gonsalves is available?
It sort of depends on the situation. Depends on the opposition, but usually Caldwell will get the nod over Dorman, just for a couple of different reasons. But I think both guys are going to have plenty of opportunities, considering the way the early stages of the season have unfolded.
Let's talk about LA and New York, the Galaxy visiting the Red Bulls, who have been on a roll, one of the best teams in the league, if not the best team in the league on form. A 1-1 draw, it took... It seemed as though that was a Red Bulls game to win. They end up getting a draw out of it after a lucky break and a bounce off the head of Felipe Martins. I don't know how they should feel about that game. Again, that wasn't LA's best performance, and yet here they go on the road and get a point.
Well, you know, we've been saying that a lot this year. LA not having their fastball and still finding a way to get a result. And that's what champions do. Mm-hmm. They find a way to muddle through, even though they don't have Robbie Keane, and they don't have their best stuff. And it's a good lesson for the Red Bulls because they're still unbeaten. They're still playing well. I thought they were okay on Sunday. And that's important going forward for them. And when you look at the Red Bulls, I think you need a little bit of luck sometimes to get through. When you don't have that sharpness in the final third, and they were able to get it.
With Robbie Keane unavailable, without Jose Villarreal apparently ready to go, Bradford Jameson's gotten a couple of starts, and he obviously impressed with that goal he scored against LA yesterday, or against New York yesterday. But, you know, again, I mean, it's one of these things. He's 18 years old. People want to jump quickly on a bandwagon and push him maybe farther than he's ready to go. Bruce Arena trying to pull people back. Is Bruce kind of playing both sides of this? If he's going to give Jameson time and Jameson's capable of scoring these goals, it's going to be hard for him to stop a hype train that's built on how the kid's performing.
Look, you can't stop a hype train when the American soccer community gets started. I think that's pretty clear by now, right? What I'll say about Jameson is that, yes, Bruce is kind of having it both ways by putting him in the lineup. But he's also putting him in spots where he can succeed. And Jameson at this point is not the finished product. But if you put him in space, he can do good things. And you saw that against the Red Bulls on Sunday. He's a work in progress. We'll have to wait and see. But certainly that goal on Sunday was one to cherish.
Well, can you just give, for people who have are obviously waiting for LA, not only to bring in Steven Gerrard later in the summer, but waiting for them to get a healthy Robbie Keane back into this team because he's been so influential. He is the MVP. What the difference in LA's playing style is with Keane in the lineup, and they're still adjusting to life without Landon Donovan, but without Keane in the lineup and with, say, Alan Gordon taking his spot or taking a spot up top?
Well, it's a couple of things, right? You're looking to play a little bit more directly because the strength of your guys, without Keane, is that ability to take people one-on-one. When you look at Jossie Zardes, when you look at Jameson, even when you look at Jose Villarreal when he's in the lineup, you want to give those guys opportunities to cut it at different angles and really challenge defenders. On the other side, you also have that aerial element with a guy like Alan Gordon in there, and you've got Stefan Ishizaki, who serves a great ball from the right, so he wasn't particularly good yesterday. So it's really a mix of things, and that possession underlies everything, which you need, you know, in the center of the park. And when you look at it, it's tough because Robbie Keane is the guy who strings everything together. He drops off the line, check back into midfield, help with possession, and then find ways to get people through and provide that outlet. So without him, it really strips away that central piece of everything they're trying to do. And you can tell it gets a little bit disjointed at times.
We've got a couple of games from Friday. Chicago beating New York City FC 1-0 in Bridgeview. Chicago three wins in a row now, Kyle. And yeah, I mean, NYCFC has gone through some struggles. David Villa has been missing. They're an expansion team, so you take that for what it's worth. But Chicago's improved mightily since the beginning of the season. Is this a team that can, you know, they're not going to keep winning. They're not going to win every game from here on out. But do they have enough in the tank? Do they have enough talent there? Have they figured out enough how to play together to be a playoff contender?
It certainly looks like it right now. And I think the first thing Frank Yallop is going to do this morning is set up a season ticket for Avram Grant, because David Akam was fantastic on Friday. Mm-hmm. Just awesome. And when you have a guy like David Akam who is that quick and that willing to challenge defenders, it's going to make you a dangerous team. And I think for the Fire, you see the benefits of getting everybody in place and having a chance to really go with your best guys. And it's been a good run for the Fire, even though they had that really awkward leap with the scheduling issues that mm-hmm. they've encountered.
Yeah, just sitting on the sideline for quite some time, getting a win over New York City FC. On the other side of things, for Jason Kreiss and company, again, no David Villa. That's got to be concerning for the fans. If this is, you know, it doesn't seem, there's no reports that this is one of those injuries going to keep him out for months. It's what's a chronic thing that pops up every now and then. And those seem to derail designated players, especially guys, you know, over 30, more often than some debilitating knee injury. Is this going to be something that lingers for them throughout the season, you think? Or we don't know what David Villa's health is going to be, but if he's not in the lineup, that's a different team.
It's a different team, and it's a much worse team. NYCFC did not look good on Friday. They don't generally look good without David Villa, and they don't have the defensive strength right now to cope if they're not getting enough goals up front. And that's just the bottom line with it. They did not do a particularly good job with that year of constructing a back four. There's not a lot of depth there. There are a lot of guys who are playing one station above where they should at this point, and it shows. And for NYCFC, they need to figure things out, because if the VV is going to miss time, they're going to have to construct some sort of alternate plan to make sure that they're creating enough chances, at least until Frank Lampard arrives, and then of course the calculus changes a little bit.
Yeah, certainly that does. I mean, you can't put your season on hold, and you can't just wait around for Frank Lampard to show up. You have to try to win as many games as possible ahead of that. But it is going to change things significantly for Jason Kreiss. And again, you know, you got to get David Villa healthy. You got to figure out a way to get him playing more often than not. Nemec has not been good. Is there any other way to say that, Kyle? And they don't really have anybody else sitting on the bench ready to go. I mean, they didn't dress another out and out forward during this game in Chicago.
Yeah, I think Kyrie Shelton's been okay for them in his rookie year, a guy who's shown some flashes. But again, it's the same thing that Orlando City is doing. You can't rely on rookies to be the guy. You need someone to step up and really take a supporting role in that attacking third. And we know New York City FC is going to keep the ball. They've done that very well this year, but it hasn't come to a lot of effect. Mm-hmm. So the key for NYCFC is to really start to use that possession well and find ways to produce goals. And that's not happening right now.
I'm bouncing around a bit. I got three more games very quickly. I apologize for everybody who thinks I'm giving them short shrift. Didn't mean to at all. Let me go to DC, who gets a win on the road over Vancouver. Chris Rolfe with the winning goal. Very nicely done. Fabian Espindola back in this team. And he is such a disruptive force, Kyle. He is so dangerous, or he presents the possibility of danger. He was the club MVP last year. How much does he change how good attacking wise DC United can be, and how does that complement everything else that they do well, which has them right now on tied for the best points per game rate in the league?
Espindola is a transformative player for DC United. He adds that little bit of magic, that relentlessness in the final third, and they're a much better team with him in it. And I think you saw that on Saturday. And I think you saw the experience come to the fore, because it's really difficult to go to BC Place and get a result, especially for an East Coast team making that long trek. And United, with all that veteran savvy, was able to go out and get the job done.
We also got Colorado and Dallas from Friday. I'll touch on that one briefly. It's a 1-1 draw. I don't know what to say about this game. I didn't get to see much of it, Kyle, but it certainly seems that Dallas has taken a bit of a step back since starting off very strongly, and Colorado finally figured out how to score some goals. They may not be a playoff team in the end, but at least they're showing signs of life.
There are signs of life for Colorado. I think they've managed to put together decent spells at certain points in the game, but they're never truly convincing as a team that's going to go out for 90 minutes and really play off the park quite yet, unless you're in Frisco and, you know.
It's 95 degrees, yeah.
a weird game, yeah. So
you had Blas Perez with a red card. Certainly that helped Colorado get back into the game and score the equalizer from Nick LaBraca. So a decent result for FC Dallas, all things considered, with Blas Perez and the red card. I haven't seen that incident close up. I don't even really. I've seen replays of it, Kyle. I don't know if you've had a look at this. Is Blas Perez going to be looking at a longer suspension, or is that just maybe we'll just get past this? And because FC Dallas is a different team without Blas Perez.
Absolutely, and I was rewinding back and forth on Friday night. I couldn't find a decent angle of that, and I don't know if there's one that exists. I'd certainly be interested in seeing it, because FC Dallas needs Blas Perez. He's a key figure for them up front, and he's an important piece of what they need to do. So it'll be interesting to see how the league deals with that, particularly with, you know, at least at the outset, some questions about the visual evidence available.
All that speed on the outside and whipping and crosses, Blas Perez's head is a great weapon for FC Dallas, and they'll miss him. If at least for one game, we'll see if it's longer. Finally, Seattle gets a 1-0 win over Portland up at CenturyLink Field, the Cascadia Derby match. I don't know what to say about this game. It didn't provide much entertainment for about three quarters of it. It finally picked up in about the 80th minute, I suppose, Kyle, when Seattle scored and Portland put together some chances. Did that game tell us anything about either one of those teams?
It tells us that Seattle is still an opportunistic team, even when they're not firing on all cylinders. It was not a good game by any stretch. It wasn't an entertaining game for most of it. But Seattle kept plugging. They made it difficult for Portland to really let loose. I mean, I think the Timbers were okay after the break. I thought they created some chances in the break, but when you have that sort of situation where you're in a long throw setup and Timbers let the ball bounce and all of a sudden Clint Dempsey's got it in the back of the net. And that's part of the benefit of being Sounders, because sometimes you can just rely on your stars to pop up at the right time and snatch you the 3 points.
Now, you can't let the ball bounce at CenturyLink. We know the ball's always bouncing at CenturyLink. That's a different thing for a different day. I don't want to go on a rant. Before I let you go, Kyle, there's been a bit of discussion on Twitter and a couple other places that Montreal, heading into their Champions League final, second leg against Club America, with Evan Bush suspended via red card last week, that they were looking for an inside the league loan to cover their goalkeeper deficit. And first it was Sean Johnson. I've heard Stephen Fry's name linked to this. The notion that Montreal could potentially get a keeper on loan from an MLS team for a one-off situation in the Champions League sounds ridiculous to me. Now, I think the league has has squashed this notion, but why was this even a discussion at all?
It's a good question. I don't know. It would have been a farce if it happened. I just can't even comprehend that would be considered all right by really anyone involved. But if you're Montreal, you have the responsibility to do your diligence and do everything you possibly can to put yourselves in a good position. And Evan Bush picking up that second yellow card really hurts the impact, because they have some goalkeeping depth issues with Eric Cronberg cup-tied and Maxime Crepeau coming back from injury, and John Smith's on loan from FC Edmonton. I don't blame the impact
right
for exploring all those options. But it's kind of a farce that it got to the point that it did, wasn't it?
I think so. But at the same time, you said you can't imagine it would be, you know, it would be seen as all right by anybody involved. And yet this is MLS, and we kind of go, well, you know, stranger things have happened.
When you look at the actors involved, you can totally understand why Montreal looked at the situation and thought, maybe we can do something here. But yeah. I think sanity will prevail in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of weird to watch that track through. And I know my colleagues at Fox Sports 1 were all over it yesterday trying to make sure that we had everything sorted out.
Yep. Kyle McCarthy from Fox Sports, foxsoccer.com, Inside MLS. Kyle J. McCarthy on Twitter. Fantastic guest every time he joins us to talk some MLS. Kyle, I'm going to let you go, but thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
There goes Kyle McCarthy. If you're not following Kyle McCarthy, I don't know what's wrong with you. Stay tuned. Be right back. We'll open those phone lines. We'll talk about some of those comments from Don Garber about the state of the league, the growth of the league, promotion, relegation. It's all on the table. Don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com.
To Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we go. Phone lines now open. 646-832-3909. Continue the discussion about MLS. Talk about Don Garber's comments from Friday via his roundtable with a bunch of reporter types. I was not involved in that. You know, I don't know where my status is. Just a, you know, little pullback here. I write for ESPN. I write a column for U.S. soccer players. Do a lot of writing. Not sure I'm in that club. I know I wasn't. I wasn't invited to that particular event. But I'm just saying, like, in general, if there is some sort of press conference call or conference call and involves Don Garber, it's not that I don't want to be involved. Well, maybe that's what it is. More than anything else. Not want. I just feel like we're living in this world now where if you want that information, it's going to be on Twitter 2 seconds after he says it. And sometimes they even stream these things live. So what's the point of dialing in? Maybe it's just as that I know, I trust that those guys out there who report on the league day to day are going, first of all, there's a hierarchy. Obviously, there's a hierarchy. If you're Sports Illustrated, if you're ESPN, not me, the other ESPN guys, the guys that do the hard work, Jeff Carlisle, Doug McIntyre, those guys, you're getting in, you're getting a question. I trust those guys to ask the big questions, the ones I would want to know. In this case, we've got Don Garber talking about expansion, talking about plans to go past 24 teams. This is from the AP over at foxsoccer.com. In the next 6 months, we've got to come together and develop a plan with our ownership to determine when we go further, because we will. We will expand this league beyond 24 teams. All right, sorry, this is specific. This conference call was specifically with Associated Press, so they're a little different than the open ones that he does sometimes. It's not an if, it's a when. Now, remember, it wasn't that long ago that MLS said, oh, 24 is our target, we're gonna pause at 24. They're not going to pause at 24. I think that became pretty clear pretty quickly. They're going to go zooming past 24. MLS says cities expressing interest include Austin, Sacramento, St. Louis, San Antonio, and to a lesser extent, El Paso, Indianapolis, and Las Vegas. Find that interesting for a couple of reasons. San Antonio and Indianapolis, both on the NASL roster at the moment. Their potential moves to MLS, if they move to MLS, would damage that league further. Because that relates to what Don Garber then said later on about managing a bigger league and not doing promotion and relegation. He said, there's no developed second division. And that's part of the reason that there won't be pro rel. How can the second division develop if MLS is poaching all of the second division teams? But then we open up a question of whether or not it's fair to prevent those second division teams in a system that does not allow for Pro-L to move up if they want to buy into MLS, a la Minnesota United FC. These are not easy issues that American soccer is dealing with. And I'm not going to just sit here and say, oh, it's all on NESL to get their house in order, to get things together and create a very strong second division so that we can have Pro-Rel. Because, look, I would love for it to happen. I want it to happen one day. I do. But I'm not going to put the onus clearly solely on NESL when MLS is doing what they're doing. I've written this before. For MLS to say, there's no strong enough second division for us to consider promotion and relegation, we know that's not the only reason. This is also about the business model and how they like to run things and how they like to protect their interests. But if they're going to identify the lack of a developed second division as part of the problem, then I'm going to call them out for poaching second division teams. And I'm not saying, I don't know what the full build out of MLS is. I'm not even sure I know what I want it to be, considering these factors. Do I want a 32-team league? Ah, man. I guess? A 32-team league divided into separate conferences. You don't play cross-conference games. You play within your conference 30 games. Then the playoff teams from each conference go into a combined playoff tournament. I guess. I don't know. It's fun to think about, but it's also a little maddening to think about. It's a little maddening because as MLS continues to grow and grow and grow, which is nominally good for American soccer on some level, on the highest level, television contracts, publicity, marketing, the biggest cities having teams. While that's happening, there's also that effect on the second division and the third division. And we know that MLS has already effectively appropriated USL. I mean, there's some good independent teams in USL. There are. But MLS, by virtue of putting their reserve league down there, has effectively appropriated that league. It's no longer an independent, separate entity that can create its own distinct personality with its own distinct clubs. Because you're not going to just have Richmond Kickers. Now you got the Richmond Kickers playing the DC, or playing the Seattle Sounders reserves, or whoever they're going to play. Washington's on the air. What's up, Washington?
Hey, what's up, Jason? How's it going? I just want to touch upon this comment Don Garber made about the expansion. Every time they talk about expansion, now I start to cringe because I start to get worried. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, safety checks in play, but I know that that was the beginning of the end of the old NASL was, yeah. Hey, soccer's hot. Let's expand. And then, that was, like I said, that was the beginning of the end. And I know there's much more infrastructure today. There are much more safety checks. My question is when expansion to when? If we look at the big four, NFL has 32 teams, MLB has 30, NBA has 30, and NHL has 30. Mm. If he stays somewhere around there, because there's a standard already, I'm okay. But if he goes anywhere beyond that, I'm going to get really, really worried. What do you think?
Obviously, there's a couple of things here, and we've talked about this. If you're going to expand that much and do it this rapidly, I mean, let's remember that MLS was only a decade, 13 years ago, that MLS killed two teams. So, right. And they were at 10 at that point. It took a little while to crawl back to the original number. Then they just went on this rapid expansion push. I mean, TFC has been in this league for 8 years now. Is this their eighth mm-hmm. season or ninth season? And they don't feel new anymore. And part of that is because there have been so many teams added since then. And now, you wonder how the money is going to be a part of this, and whether or not MLS can get by on a salary budget of $4 million per team with 30 teams, and how you're going to be able to find enough talent to fill out these teams. And I don't just mean American talent, which you're obviously stretching way thinner than it's been stretched before. I mean international talent. you're going to have to put some more money into the system because you're grabbing more international players now. It's not back in the days when there were 12 teams and, oh, we've got some great South American players and we're paying them all $300,000 a year. You're going to have to do more of that. You're going to have to find more Europeans willing to come over here at 25, 26 years old that are of a better quality than MLS has typically gotten, because now they're replacing, now not replacing, but now they're filling spots that used to be held by American players. And you can't just bring up a bunch of players from the lower divisions and expect to have the same level. So MLS has an issue here with quality in opposition to their expansion, Washington. So, but and I'm with you. Like, if you go past 30 teams, which is a big number, 30 is a big number.
It is.
If you go past 30 teams, what is the end game? And the reason, I mean, obviously MLS is not in a position. This is, I mean, there's basic business principles here. You're not going to say, if you're MLS, you're Don Garber, you're not going to go out in public and say, well, our goal is 30 teams. Our goal is 32 teams. Our goal is 34 teams. And then we're going to stop. And you're not going to put a hard cap on it, because that starts to limit the possibilities. That starts to limit demand. Now you don't have as many cities coming after franchises. And the more cities that come after franchises, the higher those expansion fees go. That's basic supply and demand.
And that brings me to the next point. Just like you said, he should not put a cap to it, right? And I agree with you. Maybe in indoors, he's saying, listen, we're going to shoot for 30 and stay there, but don't make it public, right? I feel the same way when he makes comments about Pro Rel. Whatever he feels, he should keep that to himself. Every single time he says, no, we're never going to have Pro Rel, we're never going to have Pro Rel, I think he shoots himself in the foot.
Yeah.
Just shut up about it.
Well, I think that there's a bit of, clearly there's a bit of hostility on the part of the league, that this is an issue that they have to deal with over and over again. Now, I think they should expect that. This is soccer. The rest of the world does Pro Rel. You should expect that Pro Rel is going to come up. But, and I think this is a bad look. This is a bad look for MLS when Don Garber's, and I don't have this audio, and I suppose I need to listen to it for context, because that always changes here. But when he says things like, it's not going to happen, that, again, that is, it sounds churlish. It sounds,
it's not in our, you have to say things like, it's not in our plans, we're not ready for it yet, not right now.
Right.
But to say never, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot eventually.
Right. I mean, and he doesn't actually use the words never. Here's the quote. I believe we can expand and manage the league far larger than we have today without having to contemplate promotion and relegation. I will certainly tell you that in the near term, and that near term is a long time from now, so he's not even talking near term, he's talking long term, there's not going to be promotion relegation. It makes absolutely no sense. There is not a developed secondary division. We have union agreements. We have national television deals. We have investors that have put in billions of dollars. It is not going to be something that could be managed anytime soon. Now, remember that Don Garber is effectively the mouthpiece of the owners, okay? This may be his opinion on some level, but essentially what he is giving you is the distilled thoughts of those 20 guys that are currently bought in. And they obviously don't want this. And why would any businessman want it? So that's what I'm getting here. And again, I think that there's
while that quote doesn't use the word, the term never, and you're right, he hasn't used the word never, but I have heard him say that there will not be Pro Rel during his tenure.
Yes.
As long as he's commissioner, he won't have Pro Rel. I think when he makes that comment, he's shooting himself in the foot.
I think that he is closing doors that don't need to be closed.
Exactly.
Because even if you do not, even if MLS doesn't believe that Pro Rel is coming in the future and any time in the near future or long term or whatever, even if MLS doesn't want Pro Rel as an organization and the owners as a board of governors who are bought in and are paying everybody's salary and it's a shared thing, even if they don't want Pro Rel, what you do when you allow it to be a possibility is that brings attention to the league that might not otherwise be there. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just another brick in the wall that is discussion around MLS and American soccer. And why would you limit yourself there? Yeah. I may have issues with some of the proponents of Pro Rel in this country and how they go about pushing their agenda, but that doesn't mean that I don't agree that Pro Rel should be on the table. I absolutely should be on the table. Washington, you got anything else, man?
No, my man. Thank you very much.
You
take care.
Get in 646-832-3909. You guys are a little sleepy on a Monday morning. That's okay. I get it. We're all waking up. We're all getting into our routines. I got to the studio just a little bit later than I usually like to. I have a routine and I got a coffee and setting everything up. And I just don't want to be rushed here. So maybe that's where you guys are. It's 11 o'clock on the East Coast though. You should be going. You should be working here. You should be getting in. 646-832-3909. Now, Garber also addressed specifically the issues of Miami. He did say that essentially he said that Miami's going to come at some point. He said Miami will be in Major League Soccer by the end of the decade. Now that's 4 years left, 5 years left in the end of the decade. Not quite. We had two mayors push us to waterfront locations, and then we were not able to finalize a deal on those sites. Now we've got to say, are there other downtown urban locations that might make sense for us? And we believe there are several, and that's what we've been working on. They're going to go to Miami, or they're going to do everything they can to keep that possibility at least on life support because it's David Beckham. Because it's David Beckham. And I believe that at no point will you hear MLS say that Miami is dead. He also went on to say that Sacramento will eventually get in because, hey, they've built something pretty major over in Northern California. Guillermo is on the line. What's up, Guillermo?
Good morning from Northern California. In fact, hey, good point on this whole pro rel not happening in his tenure, but, he is not going to be there forever. And two, could not anybody in the lower division sue MLS on the basis of a monopoly, given that they have the connection to FIFA? I'm not saying that they'll win, but could they sue?
I think that may have been part of the original Frazier versus MLS argument from the players and their lawsuit against the league. I think that the league is pretty protected on that front, Guillermo. I don't know that that's, and we'd have to get a lawyer on the air. I believe it's been proposed before, that argument. I just don't know that anybody has the resources and the time to go really in on MLS and challenge that after Frazier versus MLS essentially allowed MLS to continue to operate the way that they were. The monopoly question, the antitrust question, I'm just not up to date enough on it. I mean, I think, again, there seems to be some cracks there, and certainly some of the actions of MLS over the past 5 or 6 years have given more ammunition to the people who might challenge the league's monopoly, if you want to call it that. But they also have the argument that, hey, there's foreign leagues and everything else, and we're not, I mean, what monopoly are they holding? I mean, sanctioning of a top division is standard.
As a league, right? They're the only ones that have the the pipeline to the official world soccer, right? As a professional league, you can make the argument that they are acting as a truck that blocks them access to the world market, right? It's not about the other leagues that are in the world, but in America,
right?
Like a funnel.
Yeah, I think that the structure as it exists, it's become, to this point, it is so entrenched that I don't know that you could win that argument. I don't know. You got anything else? Go ahead.
Yeah. I watched the league action this weekend. I thought that all the goals were great, especially because they're being scored by young players. That means that the development, even though whatever we may say, it's actually working in the field. They're scoring and they're picking up the speed. I also caught the USL game, the reserves for the Whitecaps and Seattle. That was a pretty amazing game. And I'm looking at I always look at the stands, right? Because it's third division. They seem to be getting 500, 600 people to the field, and that's not bad.
Yeah, I don't know what the targets are. I mean, USL was previously, before the split, the second division, and that was the target there was more like 5,000. I don't know what the targets are, especially for those reserve teams. I mean, if you're playing in an auxiliary location with your second team, and they've got another reserve team coming in, you don't expect to draw a lot. But I don't know. Again, this is what I meant by USL being appropriated, being co-opted by MLS. That's essentially what's happened here. Is that good for the future of American soccer? I don't really want to get into that necessarily right now. You got anything else, Guillermo?
That's it, man. You have a great week.
All right. We also, thanks for the call. We also got a bunch of stuff happening in NASL as well. Atlanta and the Cosmos played a goalless draw, so nothing there. Indianapolis and the Railhawks played a 1-1 draw this weekend. Tampa Bay took down Jacksonville, so the Rowdies get a win in a Florida matchup. Minnesota United and San Antonio drew 2-2. And Fort Lauderdale taking down Ottawa 3-1. All right, let's go to Ray in Milwaukee. He wants to talk about Don Garber as well. What's up, Ray?
Hey, what's up? I think that the model that they're trying to emulate the most is Major League Baseball type model. And I do believe that the local broadcasting rights is going to be the biggest push of new money coming into the league. And I truly believe that it's going to be over a 30-team league as soon as he can get it.
Yeah, you know, again, I don't know that I'm fundamentally opposed to a league that's bigger than 30 teams. I mean, it's a gigantic country. There's lots of places that want soccer. I think it's very difficult to sell second division soccer to American sports fans. I don't mean soccer fans. I mean sports fans. Some places have better luck than other places. But I think that, you know, when we what we see in Sacramento is people going out to support their team because there's a promise that maybe one day they're going to be in MLS. That's true in a lot of places. I think that a bigger league than 30 teams, the biggest issue for me is just how you manage that, what you do with it, how it operates. Right now, I don't like the fact that 12 teams make the playoffs. Right now, I don't like the fact that we don't have a balanced schedule, because while I don't think that that's not necessarily has to be a soccer thing that you play a balanced schedule. It just would help me. It would allow me to better understand who's good and who's not. So when you go past 30 teams, Ray, what do you do? Again, do you do two divisions and you play everybody in your division twice and that, and you don't cross over until the playoffs?
No, I think you're going to have interaction because you want the Los Angeles playing New York during the regular season.
Well, then again, so, that kills any notion of a balanced schedule, which again, I maybe it's just because I do like symmetry. I do like things to be even. I want them to get to a point where they can go back to some sort of balanced schedule. It's obviously already done in terms of the entire league. Once you move past 20, you can't have a balanced schedule where everybody plays everybody home and away. You just can't do it, which is what we've clearly got a situation where they're not doing that now. And I think that they eliminated the possibility of a balanced schedule because they knew they were going to be moving past 20 and it would never be possible again. But so that's, I guess for me, it's a pipe dream to have 32 teams, 16 in each division. You play 30 games in your division, especially considering how congested the schedule is already with 34 games. I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then as for promotion and relegation, I do believe that's never going to happen. I think that you're going to see a minor league system set up. It's already putting in play a lot of these guys with these LA2 and Seattle. And so I think that's the model that MLS is going to use as a feeder system into developing talent.
Okay, but the problem with that idea, and I don't know that it's necessarily the wrong thought, Ray, is that you're always going to have a league like NASL who has independently minded people who want to put money into the game and think they can do it better or think that their model is more appropriate. And you can call them a rebel league or a rogue league if you want to, but I'm not even sure that's the right terminology. They just have a different philosophy about it. And as long as the NASL and MLS are going tete-a-tete, and yeah, right now MLS has a massive advantage, but you never know. As long as NASL is you know, going up against MLS and so on some front, that can't be good for American soccer.
Well, I personally believe that the NASL either is going to fold or it's going to that current teams are going to be bought into the it's going to be like a merger, like with the ABA, with the NBA, they only took a handful of teams. Yeah. I think that's what the future is. Yeah, I don't want to make anybody mad at the NASL. You know, it's a quality league, but yeah. I think that's, if you look at in sports landscape history, anytime there's been two rivalry markets, some sort of merger has come up from it.
Yeah. All right. Well, appreciate the phone call, Ray. Thanks a lot. You just don't want to end up being the spirit of St. Louis, the Kentucky Colonels, when that merger comes. And that's some old school American sports history for you guys. Al in Missouri wants to talk about Sunil Gulati in all of this. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing good. What's his role? Because it seems as though he's a figurehead, and I figure, you know, why doesn't he do something with this, with the NLS, NASL, and USL Pro situation and everything else?
What do you mean by that? I mean, look, I think that we look out. Go ahead.
You know, we're still there arguing about promotion and relegation. Everybody wants it. I wouldn't mind having promotion and relegation. I think it'd be good here. You know, but it's not going to happen. So, what he could do is, you know, maybe have some ideas, you know, with he could put forth and everything else. You know, I don't know if you know this guy's name. His name is Derek Richie, who used to use Fit from the Red Card. And, you know, after, you know, going recently to his YouTube posts and everything else, I thought he put up a pretty good idea of what the MLS may have, you know, within the next couple of years. You know, and I'm hoping that, you know, that the U.S. Soccer Federation will kind of step in and do something about the situation. Because, you know,
they don't have the power.
They
don't have the power. U.S. Soccer doesn't have the power in the situation. Now, they are the governing body of soccer in the United States. And on paper, you would say, okay, well, they've got to sanction MLS as first division. They've got to sanction NASL. They got to sanction USL. They got to run all of these, youth programs and the national teams and all these things. And you look at it and you go, okay, well, they should have a say in this. And they certainly should. And I think they have a seat at the table. But you're talking about a situation where, because of the checkered history of American soccer and how much money has been lost and how many times we failed at this, the people with the power are the ones spending the money, and that's not U.S. soccer. So they can make all the declarations they want. It's not going to matter in the end. And I think Sunil Gulati knows that. This is the same attitude he has about being on the FIFA executive committee. He would rather work on the committee trying to change it from the inside than come out and make a bunch of noise and talk to the press and call out people for scandal. Because that's ultimately not going to get him anywhere. He's only going to be ostracized and pushed to the margins. That's the case with MLS. That's the case with the structure of American soccer. The people with the power, it's not Don Garber necessarily, but it is Don Garber's bosses. They're the ones in charge here.
True. That's very true.
All right. I got to let you go. Go ahead. Okay. I'll let you finish, Al. Go ahead.
Hopefully the league, you know, goes to stay at between 28 and 30 teams, because if you go beyond 30 teams, you know, you're going to really, really cause a lot of havoc, I think.
Okay. I mean, again, it sounds unwieldy. Garber is making claims that he thinks that they can handle it. I think it depends on how you structure this. And they're not going to, you know, you could imagine one day. This is not impossible to imagine, a 40-team MLS, 20 teams in two leagues, and you create a two-division system, and you have movement between those two divisions. I just don't know how we get there, because it's going to be so difficult. It's going to be so painful to put that in place that I just don't know how it happens. Tim in Brooklyn, what's going on?
Hey, Jason. First, congratulations on Sirius.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, my comments are, one, people, do not molest Raul. No pitch invasions, please. We would like to keep him intact. And for anyone who wasn't watching NASL, try and check out the San Antonio goal, 60-yard goal from a free kick.
Yeah.
Caught the goalkeeper out of his box. It was just he dropped a bomb on him. It was a cannon.
Well, we've had some pretty insane long distance goals. Indy 11 had a 45-yard goal last week, and now you got the 60-yard free kick. I'm sorry, these are impressive goals, and I'm not taking anything. Well, I am going to actually. They're impressive goals, but what the hell, goalkeepers? Come on, that's pathetic.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Hey, with the pro role and everything. I love the talk going on. One thing I would like to point out is that I think there's like 200 maybe cities larger than Real Salt Lake's market.
Yeah.
Or say Portland.
Yeah.
And as long as the only way that they see that they can get into the quote unquote top league from the, I would rather say other leagues, is to give $100 million, then why, how do they grow? Why would people, you know, go to these quote unquote lower leagues if there's no sense that they can go anywhere? So in the end, U.S. Soccer Federation and MLS and how this is set up is hurting,
Wait, hold on, Tim. We have, and I know, look, however you feel about minor league baseball, we have a lot of minor league baseball teams in this country. Not all of them do well. Some of them struggle. But we have these teams that aren't going anywhere. They can't go to the major leagues. They're stuck in AAA, AA, single A, whatever it is. Some of them draw, you know, 10,000 people a game. They do pretty well. Now, it's all families and stuff, and that is what it is. But we don't have those people clamoring for an opportunity to go to the top division. Is it just because it's soccer? We have some sort of exceptional notion of what soccer is supposed to be because that's what everybody else has done since the game started in the 1860s?
That could be some of it. But I think there's a ton of cities, obviously, that, you know, could come up. Not, you know, 200, but... I would say all of the NESL teams are potential moves up. I don't think there's anyone that's really, you know, a bad idea. Maybe they need, you know, some work. Everyone needs, well, there's teams all over the place that need, stadiums. There's MLS teams that need stadiums. There's MLS teams that just got stadiums and you can see, you know, what kind, you know, how that helps. And a lot of this has to do with, your ability to get a stadium partially is based on people's perceptions that you need to be MLS or going
sure.
to MLS
yeah.
or
okay.
we're not going to give it to you.
Right.
It's hamstringing development, to a point.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But
something needs to happen.
But I don't know that these things are all as mutually exclusive as we might believe them to be. That it, because we don't have ProRel, it doesn't promote teams to go out and build themselves up and try. You know, the conditions.
I think that's why someone needs to step up and establish a long term plan because it doesn't even. People forget that there's different types of promotion and relegation.
Sure.
There's
right.
various types in South America. It doesn't have to be a three up, three down
right.
every year.
Right.
Put
right.
restrictions.
Right.
If you don't have the fan base or a stadium, you don't go up.
Yeah.
If you're in the top league and you're just doing crap Chivas was,
I'll tell you guys.
You go down, but you don't cancel a team.
Sure. Tim, I'll say this. As long as MLS is in an expansion period, as long as they are in expansion mode, it's not going to be on the table because MLS is going to find it tougher to sell these cities, even the ones that have NESL teams already or USL Pro or USL teams, they're going to find it more difficult to sell teams on the notion, ownership groups, guys with money, guys willing to write the checks. It's going to be more difficult to sell them if the possibility of relegation comes into play. And then you would just have the basic fairness issue of, well, expansion teams are generally suck anyway. Are you going to send down an expansion team the second year or the first year they're in the league? No, you're not going to do that. You need to have...
Well, that's not necessarily true.
What do you mean?
Orlando did pretty good. Cosmos could do great.
No, Minnesota, I'm saying that in the case, take Orlando for example. Okay, yeah, Orlando put together a pretty good squad. They've had some good results, but it's very possible they finish in the bottom two in the Eastern Conference this year. If promotion and relegation was instituted and they were under threat of relegation in their first season as an MLS team, again, no ownership group would ever buy into that idea. If the possibility of relegation is open in your first year as an expansion team, you're not putting up $100 million or $75 million. Or whatever it is, because you're going to go down to the second division. The interest is going to wane. You're not going to get as much attention. You're not on national television anymore. It's a domino effect. So again,
not all of those things are exactly true. There is, you know, and especially coming in a couple of years, and you know, this would not even be able to happen in, you know, right away. NESL is moving up with their TV and. You know, there's a lot of good fan bases.
But again, Tim,
if they knew that they could, there's a ton of these fan bases. I mean, Cosmos just got 12,000.
I'm talking about the
bigger stadium.
I'm talking about the guys.
Larger on a regular basis.
Tim, I've got to move on, but I'm talking about the guys writing the checks. You're not going to convince the guys writing the checks to write those checks if relegation is on the table in year one. So as I said, you're not going to have any possibility of pro rel while MLS is in an expansion period. And we don't know when this expansion window is going to close because they're already talking about zooming past 24 teams. We're on this show discussing whether the full build out is 30 or 32 or 34. I've seen Grant Wall on Twitter say, hey, the idea of a 40 team league with two tiers is a great one. Yes, exactly. It is. But how do we get there? All of those things, all of those steps between this place and pro rel, nobody knows how those are possibly going to happen. And I'm not defending the guys who write the checks for their stance that they won't sign up if pro rel's on the table. I'm not saying they're right to do that. I'm just saying that that's the reality of the situation. David in Arizona, what's up?
Hey, Jason. You know, my thoughts on this just real quickly on this last point that's been discussed is I was very disappointed when the team, when the league went past 20 teams because I wanted them to stop and have a period of time where those latest expansion teams could, you know, get into the league and have a few years and then, then you start talking about promotion and relegation. So I don't think you can do it unless you have either a grandfather period for recent expansion teams or, you have a period of 4 or 5 years where you stop expanding and then you move on to this.
Right.
But you know, I'm just going to mention FC United of Manchester. Mm-hmm. This is a club that was formed in 2004, 2005, right in that period of time when Malcolm Glazer bought Manchester United. They literally a supporter-owned team. They just got promoted to the Conference North, which is essentially the sixth division in English football. Two more promotions. And they will be in the football league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can happen in this country. And one thing that I think that the big guys with the checks, as you call them, what they're missing out is, they're missing out on an opportunity to have the people who care about the game, who are willing to put in small amounts of money at a lower level and build something up. They're missing that opportunity. Then they can come in and invest in a small group that knows what they're doing because they've had to struggle through the lower divisions and then invest in them as they get closer up to the top division. That's what's missing from the U.S. system.
Okay.
So we end up with a bunch of wealthy people who do not, Jason, give a rip about this game. There's very, people keep talking about these fans that are owners. Bunch of BS. There's a few of them, maybe. But they're businessmen, they're sports people. Half these people like Paulson, their entire family has been in the, you know, in the business of sports franchises. They don't give a rip about soccer.
Sure.
It's just a business opportunity for them. Mm-hmm. And that's what's missing from the way that we do this in America.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And for some people, that's missing. For some people, it's not missing. For some people, they don't care about that thing. And again, I don't know what public opinion is on this. I don't know, think there's been a massive poll conducted on whether or not American soccer fans, American fans who may come to soccer late, because remember, every year we're adding more soccer fans. And I don't just mean the guy who has never given soccer a chance who's finally waking up to it. I mean kids. I mean, you know, there's a aging generation, maturing generations are now growing up and becoming soccer fans. I don't know. Again, I'm not saying that there is one way or the other a public opinion push for pro rel or apathy towards it. I would be interested to see that. But it doesn't matter. What the problem is that it doesn't matter right now. And I don't want to just throw up my hands. And I understand if people want to advocate for this. I just don't know. I don't know what inroads you could make by rabble rousing on Twitter. I don't know what inroads you can make doing that. Again, the people who sign the checks hold the power right now. And that's not great. That's not always the way it should be. The fans should have more say. We have to figure out a way to do that. And if you want to challenge them in court, okay, fair enough. As who was it? Ray in Milwaukee suggesting the notion of, or maybe it was Guillermo, suggesting the notion of an antitrust lawsuit. I don't know if there's anything to that. I don't know. And maybe we can talk to some people who've been around this game in this country for a longer period of time to see if they know. All right, let's wrap up this edition of Soccer Morning on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Remember, we are 1 week out from the launch of the Sirius XM FC 94 show at 11 a.m. Eastern on May 4th. Make sure you signed up for Sirius XM and gotten the package that gets you Sirius XM FC if you want to listen to that program. We're very excited to get started. That's when the web show, the WorldSoccerTalk.com show, moves back to 9 a.m. Eastern, so make sure you set your alarms for that as well. You can go to backheel.com/story, buy yourself a lovely mug. We've got some pretty cool t-shirts over there as well. We've got a Soccer Morning t-shirt with the wonderful logo designed by 3NLFC at 3NLFC.com. 3NLFC has a new look. That's fantastic. Go check them out. They have a lot of very cool stuff well beyond the Soccer Morning t-shirt that I need to get my hands on, to be honest with you. All right. Thank you very much to all of the callers. Thank you to Kyle McCarthy for his insights on MLS. We will be back tomorrow with a Tuesday edition of Soccer Morning. See you then. Bye.